2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great. University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome on in, Cougar Tracks podcast powered by KSL Sports. .com. I'm your BYU insider, Mitch Harper, and happy to have you on board of the podcast once again. Talking some BYU football, BYU sports always on the docket here on the Cougar Tracks podcast. So make sure to subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It helps out the show a ton, and make sure to always check out KSLSports.com for all the latest in the world of BYU sports and sports up and down the Wasatch Front and nationally everywhere else in between. Follow me on Twitter at Mitch_Harper. Talking about BYU football, of course, like I mentioned, and kind of looking at the future of BYU football and what it's going to take for BYU to succeed. Because I know that you Cougar fans out there are upset with this BYU football program right now, and rightfully so. BYU currently sits at 2-4 on the season, midway point of the 2019 season, and they're 2-4. There's not much to get excited about at the moment. Right now for this BYU football team, I mean, you look at the stats, there's not much that gets you fired up. I mean, the passing yardage, I like that, but, you know, Zach Wilson, he's out. He's not playing right now. He's currently injured. And this BYU team, losing to USF the way that they did, 27-23, was a big blow to the confidence, I think, of the program and made, I think, a lot of people look big picture at BYU football. Including myself. I mean, you look at BYU, this was to me a year where I thought BYU was going to kind of not necessarily break through per se, but have a team that looked, that took the form of Kalani Sitake under his watch with mostly his personnel and kind of showed signs of this is the new BYU. So it's a term that was used quite a bit in recruiting this past recruiting class, the new BYU, the new and improved BYU. And it just hasn't showed itself. To me, this new BYU is looking like a regressed BYU football program. It's a program that has no creativity, no excitement, and a lot more questions than answers at the moment. Now, again, things can change in a hurry. BYU, who knows, maybe could spring an upset against the number 14 Boise State Broncos this Saturday in Provo. Probably unlikely, but BYU is going to go into it as an underdog, 6.5 points at the moment. But hey, BYU has been a team that can pull an upset, but they can also lose some bad games. And South Florida was a bad loss. Toledo was a bad loss. We saw the real Toledo Rockets lose to Bowling Green this past Saturday. Toledo's not a good football team. South Florida, not a good football team. BYU, probably not a good football team. And that's discouraging to hear in year four under Kalani Sitake. And a lot of questions now about Kalani Sitake's contract and where he stands in the future. Now, I've said here publicly on the show that I feel Kalani Sitake deserves a contract extension. Now, when you don't give Kalani Sitake that contract extension after the USC game, you now set the precedent. You wait till the end of the year. I don't think you fire anyone at this juncture, and rightfully so. Kalani's going to coach this Boise State game, and he's going to coach the remainder of the season. But you know what? Now, with how this thing has turned in a hurry on this BYU team, there's some reasonable doubt that Kalani Sitake could be a coach that's not receiving a contract extension after this season. His job's on the line. Even Chaz Ah, you mentioned that earlier this week. Kalani's job is on the line. And, you know, the thing is with Kalani, it's interesting. To me, I feel like Kalani is the perfect fit for BYU football. I feel like he's a guy that's well-respected by people in the administration. I think they like Kalani. I think everyone loves Kalani. Everyone wants Kalani to be the head coach. I kind of feel, though, that for Kalani now, with all the injuries that have taken place to his team and some of the poor decisions, now the expectation at a minimum is to get to 6 wins. Get to 6 wins and get to that Hawaii Bowl. I think if Kalani gets to 6 wins, maybe that contract extension is offered. I think it would be. But maybe it comes with the caveat of you got to make changes to your coordinators with Jeff Grimes and Elisa Tuiaki. Just maybe. Maybe Kalani Sitake is not interested in that. Maybe Kalani would not want any part of that, and he would just say, you know what, I got to roll with my guys, I'm moving on otherwise. I don't know. The thing is that there is a lot of uncertainty now with this BYU football team, and that's discouraging after that great start to open the season 2-1, a huge win over USC that felt like a program changer, a perception changer, and it's been nothing of the sort. BYU has spiraled out of control ever since. They lost and got blown off the field against Washington. And that was discouraging, I think, for many BYU fans that after 1 year, the same song and dance happened against an inferior Washington team. Washington's not as good as they were a year ago. We've seen that. They lost to Stanford, for goodness sake. Washington's not great. But like Washington of previous years, Washington under Chris Peterson blew out BYU. And then a loss to Toledo. And then a loss to USF. What I'm getting at is that BYU is trending down. And that was just not acceptable for this BYU program in year 4 under Kalani Sitake. So tough questions are being asked. Kalani said earlier this week that he's in a tight spot. He's in a tight spot, and he knows how to get out of it. He feels confident in his abilities to get out of it. And you know what? I still believe that Kalani can get his team up for a game. But week in, week out, there's been too many inconsistencies with this BYU team. And that's discouraging, especially in year 4. Because one of the things, too, with this BYU program under Kalani is that they have yet to take on an identity. I think they're a physical football team in the trenches. That hasn't been the case. BYU can't stop the run to save their life. They're the 8th worst rush defense in college football. That's just not good. That's not going to get it done. That's terrible. Only 2 BYU defenses since 1972 have given up more than 200 yards on the ground per game, 1993 and 2001. There you go. This could be the third. And Cronkite at USF, nice player, shouldn't be getting anywhere near over 100 yards. And USF as a team should not be running for over 200 yards. That happened. Defensively, BYU, 1 tackle for loss against USF, 0 sacks. Against one of the worst offensive lines in college football, from the Bulls. That's a problem. And BYU's got to fix it. Now, the thing is, too, I feel like, despite all that, BYU could rise up and maybe shock some people and spring an upset maybe in one of these next 2 games against Boise or Utah State. Maybe. Maybe I'm just outlandishly thinking here. Most likely, BYU's going to come down to that season finale at Montezuma Mesa against the San Diego State Aztecs. If you looked at the probabilities, Boise State, probably a loss. Utah State on the road, probably a loss. Even though I think those 2 teams are a little bit overrated. But still, the probabilities, the numbers would suggest probably a loss. Then you got 3 home games where you should win. Liberty, Idaho State, and then a road game, against UMass on the East Coast. You should win those 3 games. 5-6 heading into Montezuma Mesa against a San Diego State team who currently is 5-1. Their lone loss against Utah State. And so much will be on the line in that game. But after this season, whether or not Kalani's the head coach or not, I feel like BYU has issues. Regardless whether it's Kalani or not, BYU's got issues that will plague this program for a long time. And I want to kind of address that a little bit, my thought. To me, one of the big things that BYU needs to accomplish as a football program, when I think the athletic department as a whole, I think there needs to be more transparency. And the thing is that this is kind of tough at a place that's a private institution, and they have every right to be kind of closed off. But I think more than ever before, Cougar fans like you out there listening to this program deserve to kind of know, need to know more truths about this BYU athletic department, this football program, this basketball program. I mean, focusing on football, but the athletic department. You need to know, because this is a time in college sports and college football where it's clearly the haves and the have-nots. And where does BYU fit into that mix? Because what's so fascinating to me after a BYU loss is that, you know, most programs around the country, you go look at their team message boards, you go look at their social medias, the replies to the main Twitter accounts, all that. It's freaking out over a loss. For BYU, a loss gets amplified to the 10th degree of shut down the program. Oh, the brethren are going to end it one day. Oh, this just shows independence is terrible. This just shows BYU can't compete anymore. It's so unique, I think, only to BYU because, again, they're the only program that has taken on the independence path willingly, going from a conference to the ranks of the independents. No one has ever done this in the history of the sport willingly. There's been times even Utah State was an independent, but they didn't do it willingly. New Mexico State, Idaho, Liberty, they've never done this willingly. Maybe Liberty a little bit. But BYU's it. They're the only one. And it's just so unique to see the reactions after a loss. Because that loss against USF, I'm sorry, BYU should have won that football game. The coaching in that was not good, especially defensively. There's no excuse for that. But again, it begs the question, like, what does BYU want to be? Because to me, with independence, my thought with it is that you want to be clearly head and shoulders better than Group of Five programs on most given years. The thing is that that's not the case. You look at USF's personnel and you thought to yourself, at least I did, defensively, they look better than BYU. They have better athletes than BYU. And you can say Florida, all that, but still, BYU should have more depth than USF. They should have better talent across the board. They should have more strength. They didn't. Toledo, BYU didn't look like the better team. They didn't. They were getting outclassed in the trenches in the second half. That can't happen. And when you're an independent and you're navigating this path that's just kind of lonely at times, I just can't fathom how you can put up with these type of outcomes on a regular basis. And that's what's happening for BYU. It's becoming more of a norm. So again, I think transparency, and I think asking the question, what does BYU want to be as a football program? That's such a huge thing because I feel like the fans view it in one way. I feel like maybe the head coach has another view. Maybe the athletic department has another view. Maybe the school president and the vice president of advancement, Matthew Richardson, maybe they have a different view. Maybe the brethren have a completely different view. I think it's plausible that all of those different entities could have a different view of what BYU football should be and the BYU athletic department should be. That's a problem. That's a systematic problem that goes beyond just the head coach. Now, speaking of the head coaches, if you're going to make a change from Kalani Sitake, you know, again, I just feel like there's systematic issues with BYU. But if you're going to make a change, we know that pool is limited. Now, I hate the argument when people say, well, who are you going to get? Hey, there's always someone. There's always someone willing to take on a nice salary, not as great as other programs, but a still nice salary compared to maybe what they're currently making. BYU's got a lot to offer still. But I think to expand the pool just a little bit, you got to require, well, loosen the head coaching role a little bit and say instead of needing to be an LDS member, why not have them just have an ecclesiastical endorsement like so many student athletes that come to BYU. Why not? I mean, the Tyson Williams story, who doesn't love that? Who wouldn't love the Tyson Williams version of a head coach or a coordinator at BYU? Everyone would love that. Why not? Now, there's concerns of the football program, the men's basketball program. Are you going to have a head coach that understands the missionary path? And one of the reasons you get LDS coaches is because they understand the importance of missions. You get someone that's well-versed and educated before you hire them and say, this is what it is. You're going to have many student athletes that want to serve missions for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and you don't question that. You don't try to stop them from doing that. And if you do that, you're going to get canned. You got to let these guys have their religious freedoms. I think, and it'd be a great look for BYU. Hey, the rest of the athletic department, you don't have to be LDS to be the head coach. You don't have to be LDS to be the track and field head coach. You just don't. Only football and men's basketball. Why not loosen that up just a touch and make it a deal where you only need an ecclesiastical endorsement, and suddenly your options are a lot bigger. And if you want to roll the dice and move away from a current head coach, you can have a bigger pool to work with. Now, still, even with just the LDS pool, you don't say the biggest reason to keep someone is by who are you going to get? There's always someone.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And to get always someone, a new face, a new coach or whatever, it's going to take money. And you got to pump in more money to your coaches. To me, you got to throw more money at these coordinators. The coordinators in particular. Head coach is one thing, but the coordinators especially. Those two positions, offensive and defensive coordinators, might be the most vital and critical positions in the entire BYU athletic department. Let's face it. The head coach is one thing, a CEO type. I think you can find a good CEO type potentially, but coordinators are the key. Coordinators with experience. Can you get that, and can you bring a salary together that would make it enticing for some proven names in coordinating that have had experience, whether it be the FCS ranks, group of five FBS, maybe power five FBS, I don't know. But if you can have a competitive salary at those two spots and you get guys with experience in those coordinating positions, BYU is going to be better off. But it's going to take pumping in more money to the coaching staff. What, $10 million per staff per year? Is BYU willing to commit to that type of money? It might be needed. If you really want to go toe-to-toe with the schedules you're going to face week in and week out, I feel like you got to be saying $10 million a year for the coaching staff and be willing to go all in on that, because you can't tell me that coaches around the country wouldn't look at an opportunity at a place like BYU that, one, has a proven track record of winning, and two, plays great opponents, three, could be a great stepping stone because of all the visibility they get on TV to getting to another program if they so wish. But you got to have a competitive salary. No one's going to come to BYU for a discount anymore. Those days are gone. Those days are numbered. You've seen that the last 3 or 4 years. No one's coming for a discount. They're not. They're not coming for a discount. You got to pay a competitive salary to get quality coaches and to get experienced coaches. Experience, experience, experience. This is what happens when you have coaches that don't have the experience in these particular titles. Kalani Sitake is a first-time head coach. Jeff Grimes is a first-time offensive coordinator. Elisa Tuiaki is a first-time defensive coordinator. It's not unreasonable to think that these results should have been probably expected because they are first-time guys in these particular titles. It takes time, especially at a place like BYU, where the numbers, the personnel, take so long to get the numbers to where you want. It's taken 4 years for BYU's roster to take shape of what Kalani's recruited. And it's still a long way to go, still. along with pumping in more money to the staff, you got to pump in more money to the facilities. You just do. BYU's got a worse locker room than Weber State right now. Think about that. That's just the reality. BYU's got to pump in more money to their facilities. They have to. And it's not like BYU's facilities are terrible. I think the indoor practice facility, it's great. Top notch. One of the best in the country. Great. Lavelle Edwards Stadium, though, it's getting a little bit old. I like the, what's it? Not the Palazzo, the walkway up top. I'm drawing a blank here. It's in the upper deck, though. That was a nice touch. I don't think you need to expand the seating. That's not needed. But maybe downsize the thing to, what, 55,000? Get more luxury corporate seating in there? Maybe renovate that press box? I mean, something's got to be done. Something. But especially the locker room for the players. That's got to be improved. That's just not looking up to par. You got to compete. You got to be willing to keep up with the arms race. And I remember back in 2000 when BYU broke ground on the indoor practice facility. I think it was wasn't 2000. It was 2001. 2001 is when they announced at Lavelle's last home game, they announced the indoor practice facility. I think it was 2001 is when they broke ground, and it was President Henry B. Eyring. And he said something when breaking ground about a speech of, it's not necessary to always have the great facilities. It still comes down to effort and hard work and things like that. And when you hear commentary such as that, it just makes you think, is that kind of the view today, 18 years later, for the Brethren on facilities? Now, again, is BYU, what do they want to be? Are they willing to compete for the arms race? Because you got to compete. I mean, the Marriott Center annex took, what, 20 years, basically, to happen? It took Dave Rose's whole tenure at BYU. That can't happen. You got to expedite the process a bit. 20 years from now, my goodness, I can only imagine what Clemson's going to have. I can only imagine what even a Boise State's going to have. You have to keep up. And you got to be able to speed up the process and maybe dive into that pocketbook just a touch. Not saying go into debt, because I know BYU's not going to do that. But spend some money at it and be all in. You got to be. Plain and simple. They've done some nice things that go under the radar. Expanding the weight room. Some field upgrades with baseball. But football's got to be taken care of. And football needs its own football complex. Student-athlete building, it's nice. It's functional. But the football program needs its own facility. And then the student-athlete building can be for the Olympic sports or whatever it's needed there. But football needs its own facility. That's something that needs to happen. Just does. That's what the standard is for Power 5 programs. And if you want to walk and talk and act like you're P5, that's what you got to do. And I think also, too, for BYU going forward in the future, I think the academics, a lot is made about that. I feel like admissions are going to be, in the next few years, a little bit more lenient. I think BYU is going to have some more breaks go their way as far as getting guys in. Much has been made about, you know, players not being able to get in and things like that. Things are turning, I think, at BYU. I don't think it's going to be as difficult. It's still going to be hard, no doubt about it. I'm not saying suddenly BYU is slick. No, it's going to be still tough, but I think admissions is taking on a different approach that doesn't look at just simply numbers and metrics and stats and data. They're taking more of a holistic approach and, you know, sizing up extracurricular activities, things of that nature. The person themselves, I mean, I think they're just taking on more of the essays that they submit and things like that. I think it's going to work out well for BYU football and a lot of BYU sports. I think they're going to get more individuals and student athletes admitted into BYU that in the last 5 or 6 years just hasn't been happening. But that is something that still, I feel like these coaches deserve a little more autonomy in that regard. If they feel they're willing to put out their neck for a student athlete that they feel can handle the rigors of BYU, why not get that kid in? Get them in and help these coaches out and give them the chance to succeed, especially if they put their neck out on the line for one of those kids. And I think with the honor code too, you can't ignore the honor code's role at BYU. But I don't think it's as huge of a deal as people make it out to be. Now, I get it. 18-year-olds, probably more times than not, the high school kid is probably always going to say, I don't want to deal with that. And you know what? That's fine. I feel like because of that, BYU's got to be more willing to turn to the transfer portal and get guys out of that thing because they're a little bit more mature. They're willing. They just want to ball. They don't want to care about the partying and things like that. Tyson Williams didn't come here to party and meet chicks. He came to play football and finish his grad program. That's it. That's it. And that's what you want. You want a no-nonsense guy that just wants to ball at BYU. That's what the grad transfer portal or the transfer portal in general can bring. But I think with the honor code too, I think maybe just modernizing the thing just a little bit. I think there's been some positive improvements too. I mentioned the admissions, but I think also with the honor code, how it's being reported that it's no longer just this narc system taking place. Those are positive developments, I think, for these student athletes and students in general at BYU. But you know what? Let these guys have beards. Let them have long hair. You can't tell me when you see Corbin Kaufusi and Bronson Kaufusi with the Jets now. Yes, Corbin now signed on the practice squad with the New York Jets. You can't tell me they look more legit. You can't tell me they don't look more legit as football players when they got that beard and long hair. I don't need to see my football players clean cut, clean shaven. Doesn't mean they're a bad guy if they got a beard. Doesn't mean they're a bad guy if they have long hair. Just modernize that thing a touch. I think... Call me crazy. You modernize that thing and just allow beards, allow some long hair. You might get a few guys, a few more guys, just maybe like one or two guys, maybe every three recruiting classes. Just maybe some guys, it is a big thing to them. The thought of having to cut their hair or cut their beard. It's a huge deal, huge ordeal. Just let them be who they want to be. There's no shame in that. Modernize the honor code a little bit. I think that can help BYU football as well. There's a lot of tough things going on. There's a lot of tough things with BYU football. And I will say this. Someone tweeted at me, if Kalani Sitake was let go, who do you think would be the top candidates for BYU? This is a tough question because I think, again, Kalani Sitake, with the knowledge he has of BYU and navigating the school, it's valuable. It's so valuable. And when we're talking about all these issues of BYU, having that knowledge of navigating the program, that is a big deal because there's no Bronco Mendenhall on this staff waiting in the wings to take over as head coach if this thing hits the fan even more. There's not. There's no one on the staff that's going to be the head coach. There's just no one. Is it going to be Roderick? I don't think so. I don't know if he's active LDS anymore. I just don't know. Not that I care, but again, I don't know. That's a big deal when it comes to head coaching searches. Ed Lamb, he's not LDS. He's made that publicly known. He might be the most active non-LDS guy you've ever met, but he's not LDS. Jeff Grimes is not LDS. Tuiaki's LDS, but no one's saying he should be the head coach right now. People are saying he probably should get fired. I don't know about the firing per se, but Tuiaki, it's put up or shut up time for Elias Tuiaki. And that's why I think Kalani Sitake needs to consider maybe taking on more of a control of the play calling for BYU's defense this year. But again, if Kalani was let go, who would some of the candidates be? Here's my four names that I think BYU would look at. Number one, and I think the number one name for BYU, if Kalani Sitake was let go, and again, hopefully BYU turns it around. And we're not talking about this coaching search, but if, I think number one would be Daryl Bevel. Just a hunch. Just a hunch. Daryl Bevel would be the number one guy. Tom Homo, he's about relationships. I think Daryl Bevel, there's a relationship there somewhat. I think Daryl Bevel would be the number one guy. Just my thought. Just a hunch. Just a guess there. Morgan Scally, Jay Hill, and maybe if he's LDS, maybe Kellen Moore. If he's LDS. I know his wife is LDS. And his wife, his in-laws, are BYU grads and former BYU athletes. So Kellen Moore would be great. But I think Daryl Bevel would be number one. And, I mean, does that get you fired up? I don't know. I mean, he could be a bust. He could be great. You don't know. And then right now, I think the sense around Kalani, for many people, is that they feel like they know what it is now. They know what it is with Kalani in that it's not changing. I still think Kalani could change. I think that there could be better results still from BYU. The problem is for BYU under Kalani Sitake is they're not consistent. They can give you a great win against USC. They can give you some dog of losses against Toledo and USF. I could see BYU versus Boise State playing out in so many different ways. I could see BYU winning by a field goal. I could see BYU losing by 21 points. I could see BYU losing by 1 point. I could see a lot of different outcomes for BYU. I really could. And that's the problem right now for BYU under Kalani Sitake. You can tweet at me at @Mitch_Harper. Follow me on Twitter at @Mitch_Harper and Instagram KSL Cougar Tracks. Make sure to follow KSL on Twitter as well at KSL Sports. Going to be back tomorrow. Going to have a little bit of a fun event coming up here. I'm going to the street dedication, Cougar Boulevard, going to be taking place. I'll have some sound with President Worthen, Mayor Kafusi. That should be pretty fun. Going to have a lot of fun there down at that street dedication in Provo. And we'll have a lot more news and notes on BYU football and also BYU basketball. We're about a week out from Midnight Madness. Season is quickly approaching. Going to play some interviews coming up a little bit later in the week with Jake Toulson, Connor Harding, Zach Selyus, and a whole lot more. So thanks for taking the time to download the podcast. I'll talk to you tomorrow here on the Cougar Tracks podcast, powered by KSLSports.com.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.